From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. With all three rings of the impeachment circus on full display in Washington, D.C. on Tuesday, the conversation about the president's right to engage with Ukraine seems to lack one large base of information, that being exactly what relationship does the U.S. have with Ukraine, and what was the president doing engaging with that country. For more on that, we spoke with analyst Mark Sloboda. He's based in Moscow, and we spoke with him from Moscow via Skype on Tuesday. Let's poke around Ukraine. Maybe you can give us a little history and a little geography and some practical understanding of what's actually going on.
I'm surprised you don't know about Ukraine, Don. Don't you know that they've long been the U.S. strategic partner and ally?
Well, I've actually been to Ukraine, unlike most of the people in the United States that have an opinion about it. So, and I was there 30 years ago, this coming year, actually. So I went to Kiev, and that's not representative of Ukraine, but it's representative of the Ukraine that Americans think of. So that's a start.
even Kiev is complicated. I think the Ukraine that Americans think of is more... Lvov, Ivano-Frankivsk, and Ternopil, in Western Ukraine. But even Kiev is a more complicated bag of worms, as it were, than the way it's usually presented in the Western media. And I have to admit, as an ex-American, expatriate, immigrant to another country, sitting here in Russia. I'm not paying a whole lot of attention to these political theater of impeachment hearings going on in the U.S. I mean, because that's exactly what it is, and I don't really see the point of looking very more. We know the Democrats have the House. We know the Republicans have the Senate.
Right.
We know that at the moment, Trump hasn't done anything of such an egregious nature, either domestically or foreign policy wise, that's immediately threatening to drive the neocons to vote to impeach him in the Senate.
And even to the extent that he has done that, they have their own problems with their base, because in a lot of places, he's a lot like, for example, Ted Cruz wouldn't have been reelected without Trump. You know, there's that dynamic involved, too.
Yeah, they're terrified. I mean, I have no doubt that if it wasn't for his continued popularity for whatever reason, and I don't claim to understand with the Republican base, that the neocons in the Senate would have replaced him with Pence a long time ago already.
For sure.
But his continued popularity with the Republican Party base, which is in at least the low 80s, if not higher, depending on which poll you're reading. As much as the Democrats and a good portion of the independents of the country hate him, the Republican Party base loves him. That said, we all know the Republican Party elite hate Trump almost across the board, with barely a few handful of exceptions, and even then it's mostly with a wink and a nod and an eye towards their own advancement. They can't get rid of him, just like they couldn't stop him from ascending through the 26th campaign to the presidency because of his popularity with the base. So they have to play the game, as it were. And there is still no indication that he's done anything, again, either with the actual affairs of the impeachment or some foreign policy offense. His I personally think that his sending keeping U.S. troops in Syria now, specifically for, according to him at least, the purposes of keeping Syria's oil. If you listen, even within his own administration in the military, they openly say that's not why we're really there. that's just what we told Trump to let us stay there.
That's right.
They're that open about it. I mean,
right.
Repeatedly, Pentagon and senior White House officials have said they're not there for the oil. Meanwhile, Trump keeps saying, well, we're there for the oil. I'm never going to let go of the oil. So, right. But I think that saved him from the neocons at least considering risking going after him with impeachment.
You know, let me add something to that while we're here, because this is something interesting that I just looked at when you referenced it, and I hadn't seen before. This is a poll from late October, okay? This is, while this impeachment thing is pretty much spinning all over the media. Trump, during the election in 2016, Trump had about 43% of the independent vote. And 42% went for Clinton, people who identified as independents, okay?
So almost, first of all, the majority of Americans are independents now. The number of Americans that are in the Republican and Democratic parties are a minority.
Right.
But from what you said, the independent vote split practically in half.
And it favored Trump by a point, plus or minus two. So that was according to Pew Research at the time.
Yeah.
43% Trump, 42% Clinton, and I assume that the difference, which is 8 and 7, so 15% to other candidates, which makes sense. Now, as of October 22nd, in a head-to-head matchup with Warren, 49% Trump, 43% Warren, 48% Trump, 44% Sanders, and one-point lead in favor of Biden over Trump. And that number was from September, actually, that number, the last one.
Okay,
he's actually gained with all this stuff among independent voters. So that buttresses your argument, yeah.
Yeah, sure. That actually is amazing. First of all, that Biden does better than Sanders is really sad. It still shows that, I tend to think, reading the headlines, from a distance, that, it's impossible for Trump to get reelected in 2020. Of course, I thought, as many people did, the same thing in 2016.
That's right.
That he could never be elected in the first place.
Everybody was telling me that. I remember that.
Yep. Just a quick look at his support in the Republican Party and the numbers you just tossed out on independents,
right,
says that clearly Trump is still in the ball game.
Yeah, I would say
he very well could be reelected. I mean, right now it looks, those numbers at least still say that it's a 50-50 crapshoot.
I'd be talking to a ticket scalper about the tickets to the inauguration.
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
But anyway, at the Republican Party elite can't get rid of him at the moment.
Right.
So all of this, we all know this impeachment hearings is whether it's you consider the rationale for the impeachment hearings justified over, Ukraine gate, which is really just Russia gate 2.0.
Right. Right. Or not.
Whether you consider, his offense justified or not, we all know that impeachment is not a judicial hearing.
Right.
It is political affair.
That's right. Yep.
The politics don't align because the Republican, the House will impeach Trump.
Right.
The Senate will pass, and they'll probably compromise as they did with Clinton on a censure, a slap on the wrist.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
A lot of Americans will read out of that Trump has been persecuted politically, and there's no question he has. Not that there is enough serious things to persecute him on.
Really,
that the Democrats, real things that the Democrats, of course, would never follow through because all their presidents are guilty of the exact same things,
or worse.
Yeah. This is just political theater, but I'm very interested in the nature of what is driving this, I call it Ukraine gate impeachments, and the fact that it really still is Russia gate 2.0, just kind of flipped over on the other side now, more on specifically on the Ukraine side rather than the Russian side.
Right.
And if we take a look at a lot of the figures who are driving this, you know, the big question is, Trump applied pressure to the Ukrainian new comedian turned president with no political experience whatsoever, Volodymyr Zelensky,
right.
applied pressure to him in phone calls to open corruption investigations regarding Joe Biden, his son Hunter Biden, who got a position, position on the board of a shady Ukrainian private energy company that is as corrupt and as the day is long, Burisma Holdings, Hunter was given a position there, and then there's a question regarding Joe Biden getting the U.S. to fire the Ukrainian general prosecutor at U.S. warnings and U.S. pressure that Biden and Obama applied. You won't get IMF money unless you get rid of this general prosecutor. This general prosecutor happened to have investigating Burisma Holdings, where Hunter Biden was given this cherry position just for being Joe Biden's son and collecting, what was it, $80,000 a month at some time or some ridiculous thing about that. Hunter Biden, of course, knowing nothing about Ukraine, nothing about energy, nothing. You know, it's quite obvious. Even the Washington Post, taking a look at the matter, admitted that he really didn't do anything for this company. He just got a paycheck for being Joe Biden's son.
Right.
And then did Joe Biden get this prosecutor general fired because it was investigating the company where his son was profiting off of his name and, the attempts of the new Ukrainian regime and elite to curry favor with Joe Biden while he was acting as Obama's proconsul over the new U.S.-backed putsch regime in Ukraine. And that's at the heart of this. And then did Trump apply pressure to the new Ukrainian president to open corruption investigation into Burisma Holdings and, along with that, Joe Biden and his son? Now, the question is, Joe Biden corrupt? I mean, with this, yes, absolutely. I mean, he was basically presiding over a country. He was applying the exact same type of pressure, of meddling of pressure to the new Ukrainian regime, which was living and is still living on U.S. sufferance, to do what they said. And he knew very well, despite his absurd denials, that his son was awarded a plum position collecting, it's just an insane amount of money, a couple million over 2 years, as much as $80,000 a month, just because he was Joe Biden's son and this new company. This Ukrainian energy company, a shady largest private energy company in Ukraine, wanted to curry favor with him. And part of the reason they wanted to is Burisma Holdings is it's corrupt as the day is long. And at the time, it's owned by an oligarch, Mykola Zlochevsky. And this oligarch has lived through previous Ukrainian presidencies, through the Yanukovych era. He had a position there. He had a position in previous governments in Ukraine. And he was still currying favor under the new regime. He's the quintessential oligarch who tax whichever way he thinks the wind is blowing and figures out how he could make a profit. And the way these these companies, you know, make most of their money is in transit, right? Because natural gas from Russia to Europe has to go through, you know, for the most part, still has to go through Ukraine. That's what Nord Stream 1 and 2 right. are all about, avoiding Ukraine.
Right.
And that is basically a significant subsidization of the Ukrainian economy.
Through, right.
You know, Soviet-built pipelines. That's right. At least 5% of Ukraine's GDP right there. Just in transit fees.
And we had, we were watching over the time that, you know, after the coup, when a lot of things were getting hashed out, there was outright theft of what was Russian natural gas by Ukraine, by, you know, forces inside Ukraine from the pipeline, just, you know, tapping the pipeline and stealing it. And,
oh, yeah, that happens all the time.
Yes.
The pipelines have to be kept pressurized for a certain amount, even if Ukraine isn't drawing off, you know, gas that they've bought. They have to keep the pipelines pressurized all the time anyway,
right.
You know, to facilitate the transit of gas across Ukraine. Now, they've outright stolen gas. I mean, that's a normal thing. But also, Russia has entered into very shady contracts with the Ukrainian government, through which all of these privatized Ukrainian energy firms
right.
are made a part of. And this right. is how the black market deals are, like right. with the gas princess, Yulia Tymoshenko.
Right.
She came to an energy agreement while she was prime minister back during the Orange Revolution
right.
With Russia, with Putin over gas. And a lot of that is because Russia agreed to put large sums of gas and money in these shady companies where the money was often siphoned off into oligarchs and politicians' hands. And
right.
that was just... That's just how business
right.
with Ukraine and to some extent with Russian energy companies is done.
Right.
It's as crooked as the day is long.
Right.
Now, Zlozhevsky, the oligarch who owns this company, and Burisma Holdings were both in investigation when Hunter Biden accepted that position in London, which is pretty infamous for being really lax
right.
With oligarch. London keeps its prosperity pretty much is accepting oligarch dirty money from around the world.
Right.
And even London was turning up their nose
and doing investigations,
fraud and money laundering into Burisma Holdings and Zlozhevsky. Yep. Eventually, they did drop the case simply because the Ukrainian government, under the U.S.-backed, you know, Poroshenko, ultimately refused to cooperate with the investigation
right.
and they couldn't proceed any further. Right. But that tells you, you know, Hunter Biden accepted this position, you know, while his father was essentially, you know, playing proconsul of the new regime in Ukraine.
Right.
And is this an illegal? No, it's not illegal under Ukrainian law.
Right.
As Ukraine keeps saying, it's not even illegal under U.S. law.
Right.
Is it an ethical breach that speaks to the very corruption, the hilarity of the U.S. accusing the last government of Ukraine of corruption and using that as justification for their role in helping overthrow the previous government and basically running as a satrapy, the new Ukrainian government.
Right.
Is that a joke? Yeah, of course. Right. I mean, that's exactly the type of corruption that the U.S. accuses other countries like Russia of. And here's the U.S., you know, the vice president's own family benefiting. Right? I mean, and Hunter Biden, he was kicked out of the military after one day, right, of signing up for failing a drug test. He's been out of in and out of cocaine rehab, in and out of alcohol rehab. He's got divorces, sleeping with his dead brother's wife. I mean, the guy is really
bad news.
A lightning rod for the Biden family. And if you take a look at his career, he's basically always made money cashing in on his father's name.
Well,
and people have basically given him jobs and money
right.
just to curry favor with Joe Biden. Mm-hmm. And that is really, you know, that is old school Democratic Party corruption.
Right.
I mean, it's not to say that Republicans aren't guilty of just the same or worse, but, you know, a lot of times, you know, those of a left bent try to excuse the Democrats, and Joe Biden, you know, to him, it's not even corruption.
Yeah.
It's just it's the climate he grew up in, and you know, the way, you know, party politics has always been played in the U.S. But, you know, this is all potential dirty air going into the next election.
Right.
So it's guaranteed. Should Joe Biden's role in this and his son been investigated for corruption? Absolutely.
Of course.
Of course. Right. Is there any actual laws broken? No. But is that excuse what the U.S. was doing there? Should this have been allowed? Absolutely not.
I'm not sure that no laws were broken yet. That's why you would want to have an investigation. What you have is this. You have a government, and Biden was very active in this, over here, that essentially engineers a coup d'etat in another government. This is already illegal.
Okay, that's the real illegal thing that no one will talk about. And that's the elephant in the room.
And then what happens?
That no one's going to take a look at.
And then you have both the regulatory authority of the government now in the hands of these people, of Biden and other people in Washington. And also, I mean, when we're talking about these energy companies in Ukraine and in Russia, you know, that we have to remember some of them were and or are still in public hands, others in private hands. The method of migration from public to private hands from time to time has involved some corruption. And so
I'm going to correct you there. Has universally involved corruption
and theft. Okay.
Ukraine and Russia.
Okay.
Whenever energy is concerned, without exception, okay. Ukraine, Russia, all across the former Soviet Union, crooked as the day is long.
United States. I mean, you know, let's not hold out Standard Oil, for example, as a beacon of you know, fair dealing and honesty. But yeah, exactly. It's the nature of the business. It's an oily business. And so, you know, if you've got this guy illegally knocks out this government, is in possession of right, handling now a number of things, including public and or private rights in oil and other energy. Now his son ends up on the board of this dirty member of that whole energy community and gets paid, and is the most incompetent person on the planet. He can't hold a job even at a 7-Eleven. I mean, if that doesn't beg for an investigation, I don't know what does. And it's covered in illegality from start to finish, from the coup to the theft of, you know, to whatever else goes on. But that, where did the, if they traced the checks that were paid to him back, okay, that was converted for this gas or this oil or this coal or whatever, who acquired title to that before they wrote the check, and by what means? You're going to find all of this, everything was crooked from every input.
At the very minimum, everyone agrees that it was a huge ethical breach, and there should have been some type of investigation.
Right.
Now, the other side of the shoe is, should Trump have personally been pushing the new government in Ukraine to investigate this, and possibly have been using arms sales, military aid, and IMF money, withholding IMF loans to the Ukrainian government until the new president agreed to open such a corruption investigation.
Well, I would. You know, I'd first have to challenge whether or not there should even be these, you know, the IMF loans and all this other stuff.
Yes,
and also whether the president of the United States should have any control over that. Anyway, in other words, if it should be even possible. And then on top of that, though, I'd raise the question: well, if these other things about the legality of what Biden and his son were doing are valid questions, and if there was an investigation warranted, and since Biden has himself admitted that he thwarted the investigation by threatening people with being fired, and they were fired, then I would say, who do you get instead of the president of the United States to communicate with the people in Ukraine if the vice president was the last person that told them to go the other way?
Yeah. Okay, so when it comes to IMF loans, right, should the U.S. be pressuring other countries, you know, whether it's a corruption investigation or getting rid of a corrupt prosecutor, a prosecutor that you don't like anyway, and withholding IMF money to begin
with.
No, of course not, right?
They shouldn't have control over it.
That itself is a type of corruption.
It is.
But is that the way both that every U.S. government, every U.S. president, whether that's Trump, whether that was Obama and Biden, because they did exactly the same thing, threatened to withhold IMF aid, right? Or every previous U.S. president. Yes, that's the way the IMF, that's the way the real world works, right?
That's right.
Okay, so let's drop that off the list right there.
Right.
Military aid. There's a lot of people are screaming, oh, Ukraine's at war, they've been invaded by Russia, and for his own personal political advancement, Trump is denying our strategic partner, our ally, military aid because, you know, for his own political reasons when they're at war with Russia. Okay, first of all, they're not at war with Russia. This is absurd. It's a U.S.-backed putsch regime at war with their own people in East Ukraine. The U.S., it's a proxy conflict over a civil war in Ukraine that deals all the way back to the overthrow of the democratically elected, however flawed, government in 2014, with the U.S. full connivance and orchestration and cookies and everything, right? So it's Ukrainians killing Ukrainians.
Right.
Ukrainians backed by the U.S. killing Ukrainians backed by Russia and vice versa, right? That's what's going on, right? It's not an invasion. I mean, Crimea aside, where everyone actually, you know, 90-some percent of the people want to be part of Russia,
right,
and there were already Russian military bases on the ground,
right,
and Russia just exacted that as the price of the U.S. overthrowing the Ukrainian government to begin with as a minimal effort. But Obama was never even giving lethal military aid to Ukraine, right? Because he was at least honest in it. He never did it because he realizes full well that Ukraine matters more to Russia than it does to us on the other side of the world.
Right.
There's a lot of historical, geographical, trade, every other connections, reasons why. And that sitting right there, Russia would always have escalation superiority over the United States, meaning whatever the U.S. gave Ukraine, the government in Kiev, the new putsch government there, Russia would respond by giving either the equal or some asymmetric response equivalent to the people of East Ukraine in the Donbass to counter it, right? And Russia has been very careful about not exceeding that, right?
Right.
Of being actually very proportional with the aid they've provided to East Ukraine to make sure that it is proportional, if asymmetric, to what the U.S. Is supplying to the putsch regime in Kiev.
Right.
Obama never gave Ukraine lethal military aid. That was only Obama who did that. Trump who started that in the past couple of years,
right,
mostly through arms sales. And what he gave them, such as the Javelin anti-tank missiles, has never been used in Ukraine, because there haven't been any tank battles, and there were only small ones in 2015.
Right.
And those Javelins are sitting in warehouses in West Ukraine, kept far from the Russian border, because there's a big question with all the corruption that's in Ukraine that some of those Javelins would simply find their way
out to the other side of the battle lines. And we got to stop there. But absolutely true. Those things are basically there for peace of mind for those people in Ukraine who think Russian tanks could be coming. And they're not coming. All right, Mark, we're going to have to pick this up next week. Appreciate your time.
Yeah, let's continue this one, though, because we didn't even scratch where I wanted to get with it.
Okay, thanks.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.